Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:05 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 15th. Apple's shares gave up an initial advance, and that was on disappointing announcements from or during their product launch. They made some announcements about a cheaper Apple Watch and talking about the speed of their new processor, but there was no talk about a new iPhone or anything about 5G. And 5G is where all of the telecoms companies are investing heavily, and in order to make money off of it, then mobile phone companies are going to have to start producing in greater numbers 5G-enabled handsets. Well, Samsung is well ahead of the game in terms of delivering on those. It was expected that Apple would make at least some concession to the need for these types of products and the size of the potential market, but nothing yet. Samsung, on the other hand, has popped on the upside and is now right back on the upper side of its range. But the big question here is, when we look at the S&P 500, for example, and then think about the momentum investors that have been buying the dip all the way up since the low in March, they have been very keen to buy in the region of the 50-day moving average. Well, it bounced from that area 3 days ago and paused in here today. This is a very similar performance to what we've seen in Apple. And of course, Apple represents a very significant weighting within the S&P 500 as the only company in the world with a $2 trillion valuation. So how well Apple does is obviously then going to have an impact on the wider market. It is also, I think, worth pointing out that some of the larger cap companies are below their respective 50-day moving averages. So Microsoft is one of those. It has popped below it. It's still holding the $200 area. And if it can hold that area, well, then that will be quite positive. But so far, it's encountering resistance in the region of the 50-day MA. And that does hold out the prospect of a reversion all the way back down towards the $180 area, which is the region of the previous peak and the 200-day moving average. But the failure in the region of the 50-day moving average does question the momentum move. Then, on the other hand, you have a company like Tesla. And that has bounced very emphatically from its 50-day MA, and it now has plenty of room in which to consolidate. That's on enthusiasm that Tesla will, in fact, deliver on some of the promises about exciting new developments at its battery day next week. Investors are certainly going to be alert to any talk about a million-mile battery. So that's going to be the big topic of conversation next week. If Tesla follows through on that, much more if it were to make some form of statement about a solid-state battery, then it's quite likely that the stock would rocket on the upside. But at the very minimum, they need to announce the million-mile battery, particularly for the US or North American markets. If they do that, then there's a good chance that the share will hold its gains. If they fail to do that, well then, it's quite likely that we're going to see a significant pullback. Now, when we then think about, well, what's going on in the wider market, then there has been, I think, some clear differentiation in terms of performance. One big industrial that is still under pressure is Boeing. The share was in negative territory today. It has been rumbling along above $150 now for the last 3 months, but certainly nothing in the way of a clear bullish catalyst to push things on the upside. Then in the medical devices and other side of the industrial spectrum, you have Danaher, which has done spectacularly well, but it's a different type of company entirely. They follow much more of a private equity model. Roper Technologies is a very similar type of scenario, and they also follow a quasi-private equity model, and the share has pulled back over the last few weeks, but it is at least finding support or demonstrating near-term support in the region of its previous peak as well. When then we think about some of the losers, well, the big question will be how quickly are we going to get back to normal life? for example, Carnival Cruises was in negative territory today, pulling back from the $20 area. Now, this is a direct response to the increasing number of COVID-19 cases. I would argue, though, that cases is a rather irrelevant number. The number of hospitalizations and deaths is much more relevant. But the failure of testing regimes to get results to people in a timely manner is obviously something that is curtailing the growth of confidence in the ability of authorities to get this under control. So the number of cases has been increasing right across Europe, with the exception of Germany. And the Eurostoxx index is right in the region of the trend mean. So this is, I think, a rather important area where we need to see that support can be demonstrated. But one thing that is evident is that the banking sector remains under pressure. That is equally true in the USA, where the S&P 500 banks pulled back additionally in here today. So on the one hand, we have got very strong momentum moves where we've got ample evidence of support being found in the region of the 50-day moving average. But then for the sectors that have not been performing, they're encountering resistance in the region of their 200-day moving averages. And in fact, if we were to put a 50-day moving average on those, well, they are just above the 50-day moving average, but below the 200-day moving average. So there isn't any real rationale for using a 50-day moving average unless there's clear momentum. And there's no clear momentum in some of these underperforming sectors just yet. But they do have the potential to do better in the event that we do move into more of an easing bias, and also that there's restrictions on free movement are also eased. Now, one thing that is clear is that enthusiasm in the biotech sector continues to build, and the Nasdaq biotech sector has rebounded from the region of the 200-day EMA and the proximity of the previous peak back in 2015. This looks like a first step above the base. At the worst case scenario, well, obviously, I guess the worst case scenario is that the vaccines don't work. But at the minimum, what we've seen is that investors are increasingly getting some appreciation for the advances that have already been made in the biotech sector, whether that is CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing, whether it is the speed of genetic sequencing, which has greatly outpaced Moore's Law over the last decade. And then we have the fact that vaccines are likely to be through the phase 3 trial period within 10 months of gaining access to the genetic makeup of the virus, whereas previously that would have taken in excess of 3 years. And that compression in the ability of companies to produce viable solutions is really remarkable. But it also holds out the prospect of a new regulatory regime. So on the one hand, it has at the minimum attracted interest to the sector, but the significant growth potential that could be delivered in the event that we do get some form of streamlining of regulations, that could be transformative for the sector. So it is certainly something that is animating investor interest right now. But when we then go back and think about the wider stock market, whether that is in Europe or in the USA, we can see very clearly that the Federal Reserve's balance sheet has gone nowhere for 6 months. When we think about the ECB's balance sheet, then it hasn't really been going up in an aggressive manner over the same period, but it has at least been rising. Now, when we then I dial back and look at the total assets of central banks, well, then we can see that the trend is still rising, but it's not going up in a very aggressive manner. It's just mildly advancing. So, unfortunately, I forgot that the monthly chart doesn't work on Bloomberg for this particular index, and I'm not entirely sure why that is. It also takes a long time for it to come up. But the bigger picture here is that we've had a significant momentum move that was in direct response to the provision of liquidity and the demise of the dollar at the same time. Now we've got the Federal Reserve, which having committed to buying over 100 billion of bonds a month, is in fact not doing that. And the size of central bank balance sheets, the advance has moderated, but it is still rising. So we do have a monetary tailwind. But the big question now is that there are significant deficits that need to be funded. There was some question about whether the kind of assistance that was provided during the lockdowns was really modern monetary theory in action or pure monetary financing of government debt. But any kind of assistance provided to governments to really close their funding requirements for deficits is going to be outright monetary, modern monetary theory in action. That's part of the reason why gold prices are still really quite steady. And the gold price was in negative territory today, but it is still holding this $1,900 level. It hasn't quite been able to break the sequence of lower rally highs since the peak back in early August, but gold shares have, and they did rally enough today to break the succession of lower rally highs, although finishing pretty much unchanged on the day. So we continue to see that there is a range going on in the gold mining sector, and the higher gold prices stay and maintain these higher values for, the greater the profitability of the gold mining sector. And then we have the fact that oil prices remain under pressure, and Brent crude closed below $40 yesterday. It was steady in here today, but the bigger point here is that $40 is a shade of where it was back in January of this year, and the longer that oil prices stay reasonable, and then the greater the profitability of mining overall. Well, that's particularly beneficial for any kind of any miner where the price of their product is rising. So it's particularly beneficial for gold prices because gold is a key beneficiary of the devaluation of fiat currencies. But the industrial resources are also starting to attract interest. BHP Billiton, for example, has been talking about benefiting from the rise of green investment. So the share has consolidated rather well in the region of the 200-day moving average, and I think that there is it's quite likely that it will be able to sustain a move through the 2000 P level at some point this quarter. Then Rio Tinto broke on the upside in here today and is now through the 5000 P level for the first time in at least 12 years. So this is a significant development. We're seeing that, and Rio has been the miner that has most clearly identified itself as being the producer of renewable energy metals, most particularly aluminium and copper. But it's also particularly interesting that China's production of steel and aluminium hit another new high in August that followed on from a new high in July. So China is massively increasing its production of renewable or green-oriented metals. Of course, that is only the new name for steel and aluminium. These are also significant metals for infrastructure development, for the industrial base, and also for military uses. And China is producing metals as a way of directly increasing economic activity. So when we think about the Chinese market, the A-share index has held the lower side of its range. The banking sector having pulled back violently at the early part of this quarter has at least found support in the region of the 14,000 level. When we then think about the MSCI emerging markets, Chinese shares represent a very large weighting within it. So it's been range bound now for the better part of 12 years. And we can also remember that while there is a lag factor here, that it looks very similar to Rio Tinto. So when we then think about emerging markets, not only does China occupy a significant weighting within it, but also the health of the Chinese economy is a very strong arbiter in how well other emerging markets do, because they are so dependent on Chinese demand, both for products and for resources. The renminbi has also been strengthening in here, and I'm going to show it the other way around. And it's a clear break of the succession of lower rally highs. Now, it's important, I think, to contrast this chart with the Asia Dollar Index, where the Asia Dollar Index has lagged somewhat. Obviously, it's got more renminbi in it than any other currency. But the strength of the renminbi takes some of the pressure off of regional currencies. So that does hold out the prospect that we're going to see additional interest in emerging markets. Investors in emerging markets generally like to have the currency, the yield, or the interest rate, and the trend on their side. Well, interest rates have compressed globally, but they're still higher in emerging markets. Currencies are starting to move in favor of strengthening, with the renminbi now breaking its downtrend. So then people will start looking for growth, and with better demographics and easier policy and stronger currencies, then there's the potential that we're going to see a I guess an exodus out of developed markets towards emerging markets, are more of a renaissance in people rediscovering the emerging markets sector overall. When we think, for example, about the Malaysian market, it pulled back really very violently from the peak in 2018, and it has rebounded impressively and found support today in the region of the 200-day moving average. The Vietnamese market is also back above its trend mean and pushing back up into the overhead trading range. So we're certainly starting to see some evidence of a return to demand dominance. The Indonesian market pulled back really quite sharply earlier this week, but it was in positive, or yes, excuse me, last week, but it has rebounded somewhat over the last few days. Now, it's, I think, rather important that it can hold the low put in 3 days ago and then push back above the trend mean to confirm a return to demand dominance. But the potential here that we're going to see additional upside for emerging markets is clear. And then we have the Indian market. The MSCI India index looks really quite similar to the BSE 500, and that index has put in a V-shaped recovery, a failed downside break below the 14,000 level, and it's pushing back up towards the upper side of its range right now. If we just zoom in on the 50 largest shares, the Nifty 50, then we've got a rather similar condition. We'd certainly had failed upside breaks all the way between 2018 and 19, and then the very large and massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So now the big question is whether the region of the trend mean will represent support during any process of consolidation, or are we going to see it go straight back up and through to new highs before we get a meaningful consolidation? But India has got growth on its side. And then, of course, there is the demographic dividend, because we have got democracy with strong potential growth and a massive young population. So there is a large labor force, as well as a large English-speaking minority, as well as then an already well-embedded export sector. So there are plenty of opportunities for additional upside in India, but then of course we need to see the consistency of the trend also contribute to that. Now, if emerging markets are going to do better, and we already see that demand for things like copper and steel and aluminium are also doing better, and the London Metals Index has broken its downtrend and continues to be quite firm, then that is likely to also be beneficial for commodity-related currencies. Well, the RBA today was saying that they would prefer if the Australian dollar was weaker, but they don't seem willing to do a lot to try and aggressively weaken it. The most important thing, though, is that it's broken its downtrend. When we then think about the resources sector, well, the ASX Resources Index looks quite similar to that BHP index or chart, and it has rebounded from the region of the trend mean over the course of the last while. When we then think about renewable energy and the renewable sector overall, well, the solar ETF was in clear positive territory. It has held the breakout above 50. When we think about some of the private equity businesses, Brookfield Renewable Partners is steadying in the region of its previous peak. And then we have the wind sector, which has also continued to hold its breakout. So there is continued enthusiasm from investors to support the renewable energy sector. The metals that benefit from that are also starting to do well. Emerging markets look like they are on the cusp of attracting additional investor interest. And then we have the big question about whether the stay-at-home success stories are going to continue to deliver. They've gone up an awful lot already. I think it is probably time to start thinking about catch-up potential. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.